Award-winning poet Kwame Dawes is giving a reading at Northern Michigan University tonight, and he took a moment out of his schedule to stop by our studios to talk about writing and read some of his works. Kwame Dawes is Chancellor's Professor of English at the University of Nebraska. He also spent 19 years in South Carolina, where he taught at the University of South Carolina in Sumter. After a failed attempt at being a professional musician, he turned his attention to his love for teaching. Speaking of music and Jamaica, I saw that you've written a book about Bob Marley, and I was struck by the fact that it's not just a biography about Bob Marley, but it's about his writing, his lyrics. What drew you into writing that?
When I was about 16, it would have been about the same time, the time when his album Kaya was just released. That would have been 78. And when Kaya was released, my brother, who was collected music and so on, so he's an older brother of mine, I used to sneak into his room to listen to his music, and I found this Kaya album. Now, keep in mind, at the time, I was also studying Hopkins and Eliot and having the hardest time applying all the practical criticism I could to understand them. And I started to listen to this album and to even read some of the lyrics on the jacket notes, and I began to realize that I was applying some of these practical criticism exercises on Marley's work, because it confounded me in some ways and yet excited me, mm-hmm. as I found poetry would do to me. And at that point, at that age, I realized I was dealing with not simply a great popular musician, but somebody who had found a language and a musical ability, but also a lyric profundity that was going to arrest me for the rest of my life. And that's the case. So when I came around to writing Lyrical Genius, the book, it was really out of that initial impetus. And I wanted to celebrate just how brilliant Marley's art is, and how if you study it carefully, you realize that you're dealing with what I think is a remarkable folk poet, and so that's what drove that book. And it was a labor of incredible love and excitement, but it was also convenient because I could use it as a scholarship. nobody had to know that.
No, nobody had to know you really loved it. Right?
Yeah, who loves scholarship?
When did you actually start writing yourself, whether poetry or fiction or?
Well, I think we began about the same time, and Hopkins is really an interesting figure in my life because at that time we were studying Hopkins in high school, and I went to a boys' school, an all-boys school, so the study of poetry was not, at least at that time, something one crowed about. You know, one simply played sports and grunted, but we in secret were studying this Hopkins, and we're fascinated by his work. And one of the interesting things about his work was his language and the way that he brought language alive. So as a class, we started to do these imitation Hopkins pieces. Mm-hmm. This was the fun that we had.
It was
incredibly entertaining, and I was not particularly good at it. Some of my classmates, who are now lawyers and own huge businesses and so on, they were very good at imitating Hopkins. Mm-hmm. But that bit me, and I think that interest always stayed with me, that fascination with imitating and then discovering my own language. And I kept putting, you know, Hopkins' work is set in Oxford and in Ireland and so on, and I kept bringing it back to Jamaica and annoying the rest of my classmates. It turns out this was apparently a good thing to do. So I think that's when I started, but I didn't take my poetry. I was afraid of my poetry because I had some not pleasant experiences of being told not to do it by a poet who looked at my work and said, I should stop doing that. And so what really held me and saved me as a writer was the theater. I was tricked into, my life is full of all these strange things, but a bunch of friends of mine tricked me into writing a play
How did they trick you into writing a play? How does this happen?
Okay, here's what happened. So they come to my room and they say, look, we need you to write a play. And I said, well, I don't write plays. And they said, nah, we want you to write a play. And I said, well, what for? And they said, we're entering this contest, write a play. And I said, no, I'm not writing a play because I can't write a play. And they said, no, it's like a contest. We're getting, you know, we got five other people. They're going to write it. We're just going to have a nice time. We get together, have a party, and we vote on it, and it'll be great. So I thought, well, you know, so that weekend I wrote a play. And then they came in the Monday and they said, where's the play? I said, here is the play. When is the party? And they said, we're lying. This is the play. and I'm not making this up. They staged the play. The play won this contest. Really? And I became a playwright. And that really began a real intense period of writing plays. I started a theater company, and it gave me a tremendous amount of confidence. And I wrote poetry in secret. So the theater saved my life, yeah.
Okay. And when did you, if there was ever that moment, decide that, no, my life is not going to go down the business or the lawyer or the doctor. I am going to revolve my life around writing and find a career that works with that.
There was a moment, and it's a very specific moment, because I had applied for law school. I had gotten into law school. In Jamaica, after you do your first, here you finish your first degree before you do law. In the Caribbean, in the British system, you do your first year of university, and then you can apply into law school and begin your law career. And I applied and I'd gotten into law school. But I think it was two things happened to me. I had a revelation of myself as a lawyer, and it was a very vivid dream of me looking fairly, you know, at least 300 pounds, bearded, like heavily bearded. I'm nothing like that now. And driving a massive black vehicle and people calling me boss. This is my vision of it. And because I knew that I loved arguing with people, and I love to win arguments, and it was pathological, that passion. Mm-hmm. and I was growing in my Christian faith and so on, and I realized that that's not my path, because that's an ugly picture. I would be rich, but I'd be really, really a mess. So to save Jamaica of this horrendous creature, I thought, what I need to do then is teach, where I could bully people, but it wouldn't have the same kind of effect. I'm kind of joking about this, but it was really true. It was a moment of conscience, a moment where I asked myself, why did I want to do law? And the reason I wanted to do law was because I was embarrassed to say that I want to teach. I wanted to have an occupation that people would say to me, well, that's good, you know, you're making something of your life. And I don't know why I had this intense feeling, because my father was a writer, my mother was an artist. Maybe that's why I had this intense anxiety. And so I decided to teach. And so teaching was what I was going to do. I was going to teach high school. And I taught high school part-time for while I was studying. But once I got the PhD and so on, it made sense to teach at the university level. So teaching is, and that's where my passion has always been. I like teaching. I love teaching.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a moment, we'd like to hear some of your poetry. Mm-hmm. But first, I wanted to turn to Beverly Mathern from the NMU English Department, and just talk just a little bit about what draws you to a writer like Kwame Dawes to bring someone like this, mm-hmm. and specifically Kwame, because yeah. The little that I've read is like this is a bullseye here. So tell us a little bit about...
It's because his poems are so engaging and so intense, and they're very accessible and beautifully crafted, and then though they hit you, they punch you in the stomach sometimes.
So they do tricks.
In a way, but they have incredible power and force. Okay. And I met him at AWP, Association of Writing Programs. Mm. It's the big national creative writing conference in the country. And I heard him read, and that was my...
That was it.
I thought, okay, I need him in this reading series at NMU. And so that he's here is a dream I've realized.
Wonderful. Wonderful. By the way, before we go on, let's mention that the reading is tonight here at Northern Michigan University at 7:30 in the University Center in the Marquette and Nicolet rooms with Kwame Dawes. And Kwame, would you share some of your poetry with us?
I'll read a poem called How to Pick a Hanging Tree. This is a poem in the collection Wheels, which came out about a year ago. But it's also in my new and selected, which is coming out with Copper Canyon next month. So it's right here. How to Pick a Hanging Tree. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Scent of magnolias, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Lewis Allen. Young trees may look sturdy, but they have no memory. They are green, so near the surface they bend with the sudden weight. And the truth is that not all trees can carry a man's dead weight with enough air between pointed toes and earth, with enough height so the scent of rotting can carry far enough to be a message for those who are sniffing the muggy air for news. Old as it may look, craggy bark, twisted branches, drooping limbs, old as it may seem, sitting there by the edge of the canal, that live oak understands the simple rituals of hanging. See, there is the natural notch where the rope will slip and hold, and here, angled like this, the damp air off the river carries the decay for miles and miles. Sometimes a fresh tree will simply die after the piss of a dying man seeps into its roots. Sometimes a tree will start to rot from guilt or something like a curse. But the old trees, seasoned by the flame of summer lightning and hardened to tears, know it is nothing to be a tree, mute and heartless, just strong enough to carry a man until he turns to air.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Could you read some more for us?
I'll be happy to.
Thank you.
I thought I'd read a poem that I wrote for my... It's really a poem both about Colombia, where I lived for many years, and I would say it's a poem about family and about my wife. It's called Sketch. And the image is I draw occasionally. That's one of the things I like to do. Well, I used to anyway. So that's the metaphor. Sketch. With graphite, I soften your bones, make exotic the absence of your lash. Your fingers neat, elegant, cradle a plum, the light of its juice flaming vermilion through the taut skin. I etch out your gaze, tender, tender, about your forehead, where the howl of darting pain creases all. Softly, as if with a soft lead, I can calm it all, make it go away. You are going. With the press of my palm's heel, I caress the bald glow of your head, then clean a gray line where your brows were. Now there is nothing. These markings of what you have suffered. These days, bodies crumble about me. The dead, desperate for healing, grow weary, stoic, then quietly go. My blackened fingers make things round. You plump as a fruit just plucked. Tomorrow I lift you. Bird of bones, your limbs collapsed. There is sunlight crawling across the lawn. Despite the drought, it's resiliently green, except the narrow path of old sod we laid, traumatized by neglect into a crude buzz cut, and this, too, is a symbol of our loss. It is August in Colombia. Nothing can fight in this heat. Just stay still. Maybe a small wind will blow. Maybe a small wind.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Another?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is a fairly new poem. And it's a poem that is in the new collection that is coming out. It's called If You Know Her. If you know your woman, know her rhythms, know her ways. If you paying attention to her all these years, you will know how she comes and goes, how she slips away even though she's standing in the same place. You'll know that her world is drifting softly from you. And she may not mean it, because all it is she is scared to be everything, scared to be finding herself in you every time, scared that one day she will ask herself, all 40 plenty years of her, where she's been. If you know your woman, you will know that mostly she will come back, but sometimes when she drifts like this, something can make her slip, and then coming back is hard. If you know your woman, you can tell by the way she puts on heels and she does not sashay for you, because it is not about you. How she will buy some leather boots and not say a word about it. And you only see it when she walks in one night and she says she's had them forever. You will see the way she loses the weight and pretend it's nothing, but when she isn't seeing you looking, you can see how she faces the mirror, lifts her chest to catch a profile, and how she casually looks at her ass for signs of life. If you know your woman, when you are gone, she will find things to do, like walk alone, go see a movie, find a park, collect her secrets, and you won't know because she's looking for herself. And she won't tell you that she wants to hear what idle men say when she walks by them, because what you say is not enough. If you know your woman, you know when she's going away, and you will feel the big hole of your love. And you can't tell why she's listening and humming to tunes you did not know she heard before. And she will laugh softly at nothing at all. If you know your woman, you will see how she comes and goes. And all you can do is wait and pray she will come back to you. Because you know that your sins are enough for her to leave and not return.
Okay, that was terrific.
I thought some people might recognize that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, boy. Kwame Dawes, thank you so much for stopping by this morning.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
Kwame Dawes will be reading tonight. You can hear that and other poems tonight at NMU in the University Center in the Marquette and Nicolet rooms. The event begins at 7:30. Brought to you by the MFA and MA Creative Writing Programs in NMU's English Department, Passages North Literary Magazine, and Sigma Tau Delta. And for more information, you can call 227-1386. Once again, Kwame and Beverly, thanks so much for stopping by.
Pleasure.
Thank you.